This episode of Hysteria is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with thousands of different plants and over 2 million happy customers? Did you, Alyssa?
I did.
Okay, good. They have all the plants your yard needs, like fruit trees, privacy trees, flowering trees, shrubs, and so much more.
Whatever plants you're interested in, Fast Growing Trees has you covered. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to get your dream yard. Order online and get your plants delivered directly to your door in just a few days without ever leaving home. Their Alive and Thrive guarantee ensures your plants arrive happy and healthy. Plus, get support from trained plant experts on call to help you plan your landscape, choose the right plants, and learn how to care for them.
Alyssa, there's something that happens to me when I go to like a giant store nursery.
You lose all the money in your debit account.
Well, no. What happens is I like freeze up and I'm like, what did I want to plant? Like, where did I want to plant? They don't really help you very much at those big box stores.
No. And I'm the opposite. I'm like a wild ride. I'm like Mr. Mm-hmm. Toads when you get into the nursery. I just buy what looks good and feels right. And then I get home and realize I don't have any place to put it.
Right. That happens to me too. But like Fast Growing Trees, having a website where you can actually plot out what exactly works for your climate, what will be good for the sort of like planting space you have, yep. and like the sun situation in your yard. Like it has like good explanations for what actually can work for what you need it to do. Just save yourself the kind of trial and error and the multiple trips back and forth to the giant nursery where everybody is frowning at you all the time. Why are they always frowning? You can talk to a plant expert if you want. Soil type, landscape design, how to take care of it, everything else you need. You don't even need a green thumb. This spring, they have the best deals for your yard, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get 15% off their first purchase when using the code Hysteria at checkout.
That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Hysteria at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code Hysteria. Now's the perfect time to plant. Use Hysteria to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
So, Alyssa, this week our neighbors to the north elected center-left leadership, basically out of spite for what a dick President Trump is. What's the most Canadian thing you've ever seen?
I had a boyfriend for many years who worked back bacon into a hearty number of conversations.
And he was Canadian?
He was Canadian, yes. Yeah, sorry. That was the point. He was Canadian.
Wow. Do you call him Canadian bacon when you refer to him to other people? You
know, I am now.
Okay. I was once at the residence of a Canadian at a party that just happened to be on Canada Day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Happy Canada Day. And the Canadian was like, no, we don't wish each other Happy Canada Day. It's not like the 4th of July. It's like a day to reflect on how our nation can be better.
They're so earnest and wonderful.
I know. That's the most Canadian thing that I've ever seen. And congratulations, Canada. At least somebody's getting it right out there.
Cheers.
Alyssa, we record these after we're done doing the show. Mm-hmm. And I feel so loosey-goosey compared to how I feel at the beginning. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
I'm glad we got to talk about that. We talk about tariffs, which is like a stressful topic.
But happening.
But it's happening, and I think that we need to be talking about it because it's mm-hmm. coming. It's coming, and it's not going to be pretty. So we're talking about what the tariffs are going to do, what we're bracing for, and who is going to be impacted. Mm-hmm. We talk a little bit about some of the extra legal and, like, stupid stuff that they're doing that is scary, stupid stuff that's, like, hurting people. Then we talk about the new generation of women's media. Guess what? It sucks way worse than the old generation of women's media, where they were telling you to put like a scrunchie around some guy's unit. Then we talk to, Alyssa.
What?
The Pitt superfan. Dream come true for you.
Catherine Lanasa.
Who does she play on the Pitt?
Nurse Evans, charge nurse Dana Evans.
Amazing.
So she is the matriarch of the show.
Incredible. So Alyssa got to have a conversation with her this week. And then we have Sandy Petty, a Bill Belichick heavy edition of Sandy Petty.
Who'd have thunk it?
You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that warned you this would happen.
Every time.
I feel like I warned you would make good merch, but it's a little threatening. We warned you.
But we are a little threatening.
We are, I mean, yeah, vaguely threatening. Although today on the way to the studio, I was thinking like the conversations that you and I have, Alyssa, are like not conversations that I want to be like elbows on a conference table for. You know what I mean? Like I want to be wrapped in a blanket.
Oh, yes. I want to be sitting soft on a sofa.
I want my feet up on a couch.
Yeah.
Or, you know what? I was actually thinking we have a beanbag chair in the lactation room here at Crooked.
Bring it in.
No, I think we should record from the lactation room.
Let's do it when I'm in California.
Under a weighted blanket, just to like calm down. It'll be like election night vibes when I was trying to like calm down before I had to do an episode of What a Day. Under a weighted blanket in the lactation room. Okay. So the story that we are going to start with today, Alyssa, is like a really awful one. Basically, a woman in Oklahoma City had just moved into a new house. And in the middle of the night, a bunch of federal agents burst in, dragged her and her daughters outside in the rain and like pointed guns at them. And it was the wrong house. They're U.S. citizens. They have no business whatsoever with the federal agents that raided their house. They say their money was stolen. A bunch of news organizations have reached out to various law enforcement agencies and they're being really like slippery about it. Like nobody is telling them anything. And this family was dragged out of their house in the middle of the night by people who wouldn't even like identify themselves. Like,
it's insane.
So here's my question, Alyssa. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a question that more people should be asking. If the federal government, if immigration enforcement agents are not going to follow any protocols or identify themselves, what's preventing somebody from just impersonating ICE agents and robbing people?
Absolutely correct. It is a huge issue, especially since they're only putting like these vests on that look somewhat fabricated. You know what I mean? They just say ICE on the back.
You could probably order them on Amazon for 145% of the cost that they should be because of the tariffs that are coming down the pipe.
And beyond that, Aaron, okay, I don't care who they were coming after, unless it was John Gotti himself. What do they need 20? Are taxpayers going to 20 agents raiding the home of someone who potentially may not be here legally?
Yeah.
Like, give me a break.
Yeah, talk about waste. Like, look, how many school lunches could some of those extra agents' salaries have purchased?
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's just like a really crazy story. But yeah, that was my first thought was like, my first thought was like how terrible for this woman and her family. But my second thought was like, what's preventing just like random ass people from doing this? Like anywhere.
Without question.
That's why we have rules. Like that's why we have like laws. That's why we have rights. Because like actual authorities would follow a series of protocols rather than just like busting in there like they're in Sicario 3.
And even if they had a warrant, aren't they supposed to knock? Barging into these people's homes makes absolutely zero fucking sense.
Right.
At all.
Look, this party that's in power is so worried about trans people using the bathroom because they're worried that biological men might go in and like creep on women or whatever. They are establishing a pattern of behavior that will enable any old fucking people
absolutely
to just pretend to be federal agent. Like, I don't understand. Like, I'm much more worried about, like, having a gun pointed in my face than, like, seeing a penis.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Or the implication that a penis is in the same room as me, which, whatever. Anyway, it's just that story is, like, it makes me very...
Well, because it's an escalation of all the stories that we've been hearing. There was the story of the husband and wife who were in a car. The ICE agents were shouting at them to get out of the car. They were calling them by the wrong name. They were like, our attorney is on their way. It will be 20 minutes. That seems completely reasonable. They had no warrant. The ICE agents busted in their car windows. Like, that was just 2 weeks ago.
Who are these people becoming ICE agents? And why are their lives not more difficult than they should? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Who are these people? I mean, a lot of times they're wearing masks. A lot of times they're not identifying themselves. Like, they know that they're doing something wrong. They know they're doing something wrong.
Right.
I'm just so curious about, like, the psychology behind it. Is it, like, cosplay? Do you want to feel like a big man?
Well, I think that's what they're recruiting. Yes, that these are like that they are, you know, avenging justice in on behalf of Donald Trump.
Oh, how tough. Next, like raid an animal shelter and hold a kitten at gunpoint. Like, ooh, you guys are so tough.
Don't give them ideas, Aaron. Don't give them ideas.
They don't have papers. Many of them have just lived here without papers for generations. It's like that story really upset me. But anyway, it's just also like a reflection of just how stupid
and out of control
and poorly thought out. You can tell the Trump plans and you can tell the like GOP schemes And the plans and the schemes are like very different. Like the plans are sort of like, all right, we break into a house. Okay. And then what happens?
No, that's it. That's where it ends.
What happens if the windows are bulletproof? You know, like there's no follow through. It's all just like, okay, well, they're bad plans, right? But then there's schemes that are like Leonard Leo style. Like we're going to seed the legal profession with, it's like Mr. Burns steepling his fingers.
It is.
Seed the legal profession with various low level attorneys and have them work their way slowly up through the system for a generation. And then all of a sudden, by the time we realize how many Federalist Society plants are in the judiciary, it'll be too late.
Exactly.
Trump could never.
The schemers are at least, they're smarter. There's more planning involved. There's a long game.
What do you prefer? Dumb evil or like schemey evil?
I think schemey evil.
Really? Interesting.
I think because look, schemey evil, if we're paying attention, we should maybe catch what's going on. This plan evil is just break down houses, take women and kids out into the rain and leave them there.
Yeah. And then what?
Right.
I don't know. We run away.
They're just wet.
Run away with their money. It's just, but I also think the schemey evil relies on the dumb evil to convince
people. Yes, they're the executors.
Right. To convince people that there's like nothing that can be done and that even if Democrats speak up, it's not going to matter. Like
the schemers also don't want to go to prison.
Yeah, the schemers are pussies. That's why they scheme and they're not the ones like running in there like with bayonets or whatever.
No.
The schemers are like desk jockey pussy. The schemers are built like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. The schemers, go ahead and Google Leonard Leo. Just Google him. I've been thinking about him a lot because I'm working on something involving Leonard Leo. Not a court takeover, unfortunately. not a scheme involving Leonard Leo. But just take a look, Google him.
Check them out.
That's the platonic ideal of like the pussy schemer. And then you have like the platonic ideal of just the like bad, dumb, evil, like non-planner. I feel that's just like Donald Trump not knowing how to stand up straight or just like yelling about how popular he is in Michigan.
He does slouch so much.
He leans. He's like at an angle at all times. It's like,
yeah,
one of those things your physics teacher would show you like, ooh, look, I can balance this.
Yeah.
These two pencils, I can balance a book on it. Anyway, I don't want to talk about the physics of Donald Trump ambulating. But let's talk a little bit about the economics of Donald Trump's policies and the way that it's actually going to impact people. And look, Alyssa, not to brag. I know that saying you've never ordered from Shein is like saying you don't have a TV, right?
I've never ordered from Shein.
I've never ordered from Shein either.
No, me neither.
If I were like 22 and I had like 14 extra dollars per paycheck,
sure,
I would definitely be ordering from Shein.
Yeah.
You know, people still want to look cute. They want to have trendy clothes. And
I needed a tank top for the bars.
Absolutely. The going out top is alive and it is available online at Shein. So the reason that places like Temu, I've never ordered from there either.
Whatever. Potato, patata. Same.
Places from things that are not words. The reason that it was so cheap to order from them is there was a longstanding loophole in the U.S. tariff policy that would allow like certain shipments of a certain amount directly from a seller in China to be exempt from taxes up to $800. Well, the loophole is going to close. Trump signed an executive order this month suspending the exemption on packages from China and Hong Kong. This is a big deal because, Alyssa, 92% of all cargo entering the U.S. falls under this loophole.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's going to be pretty crazy. This will mainly impact ultra-discount Chinese e-commerce giants like Shein and Temu because they basically built their business around the loophole.
Yeah.
And they've already warned shoppers that prices will be going up. And the Hong Kong Postal Service has suspended shipments to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And the international shipping company DHL has sort of waffled back and forth on global shipments over $800 to Americans. So for a while, they weren't doing it.
Yeah.
And now they are again. But, you know, who knows? By the time you hear this, who knows what's going to be happening?
It could have changed.
So this is a Trump policy, but it's garnered some bipartisan support in the past. 126 House Democrats signed a letter in 2024 urging Biden to end the de minimis exemption from China.
Mm-hmm.
They claim the exemption caused an influx of cheap goods from China. So I don't want to have like Trump derangement syndrome about this.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, you know, there's good things and bad things about it. But Alyssa, this on top of everything else that's coming down the pike with tariffs, what do you think it means for average Americans? And do you think it's dawned on most people what this means for them?
Not yet, right? Not yet. I think once everyone starts ordering, you know, did you, by the way, know that Shein started as a wedding dress store?
Really? I thought it was like, it was a drop shipper, right?
but it was a portal for wedding dresses.
Interesting.
I know. I had no idea. I learned that when I was getting ready for this.
I would love to interview somebody who got married in an early Shein wedding dress.
I mean, I bet it's so vintage now. I mean, look, I think the problem with Trump's philosophy here is, right, that he thinks that if he puts these tariffs back on the Shein goods, that people who were buying are just now going to buy from the Gap instead. But it's like the point you made at the top. If you have $14 and you can get a dress or a shirt, that's he's misunderstanding the actual economics of his plan and the people who it will affect. And so for now, I think that we're going to have a period of like a month or two where people have ordered things and they just start showing up with, you get the email probably long after, because the structure is not built to endure this kind of influx of work. And so people are going to end up with like long delays to get things, and a $14 shirt is going to turn into like a $25 shirt. And the adrenaline hit of ordering the shirt and getting it is I'm going to say it about myself. When I order something online, I want it in a couple days.
Yeah.
If I get some 5 to 8 days USPS bullshit, like I am not ordering it because it's not the adrenaline hit that I want.
I know.
Waiting 2 weeks for your $14 shirt is, I think, not going to scratch the itch of what people are looking for. And I think it's going to be really complicated to like, I don't even know how you get an email for your $1 tariff.
Mm-hmm.
I had something stuck in customs for 2.5 weeks. Oh, it was DHL, and it was crazy. The system's going to blow up. It's going to implode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because it doesn't seem like you mentioned that the U.S. is really equipped to handle this sudden influx of, like, there's no infrastructure for us to assess and process and collect these tariffs.
Right.
And so it's another like dumb evil plan. I mean, I don't know if this plan is like fully evil, but like in all respects, I think I agree that maybe we all don't need as much clothes as we have. Landfills are full of clothes.
Agree. Totally.
But I do think like, okay, so they're going to try to do this. If you're going to do this, you need to have a way of like collecting it. Like,
right.
And there's not really a way of collecting it. But oh my God, Alyssa, my heart goes out to anybody who's waiting on furniture.
Awful.
Like, I have some friends that just finished like rehabbing a house before they moved in. And I was just thinking about like, oh my God, they just like slid under that like closing Jurassic Park raptor kennel door.
Sure.
To get there. Like, they got the last of their furniture, they moved in, and now the tariffs are hitting. It's like, it's crazy. I think another thing that people are not ready for is the fact that some things just won't be available.
Right.
Like, it's not even like, oh, I need to buy a shirt. Okay, well, now it's $25 when it was $14. It's like, I need to buy a fridge and there aren't any.
They say that the supply chain will be hit starting in June. So in June, we'll start seeing where things are not coming in anymore.
Oh my God. Well, Alyssa, have you seen anything on the ground that reflects kind of like what's happening with tariffs, what's about to happen?
Yeah, I actually have a good friend who is a furniture maker. He's a woodworker. And in November, he ordered a new saw for his business. It was $70,000. He had to put down 50% deposit, and it was going to ship this quarter. And he just got an $8,000 tariff.
Oh my God.
He just got a bill. And so think about what's happening to people. You've put your deposit in, non-refundable, your non-refundable deposit. Either you have to find the extra $8,000, or it sits in customs, or eventually just gets returned. For small businesses, one shipment like that could put people out of business.
Mm-hmm. Here's something I've also been thinking about. Like, Trump has been so erratic on this. Like, he's walked it back and he's doing it again and he's walking it forward. And I feel like if this is going to be the new economic reality of the U.S., that things cost more money because we pass the cost of foreign like products onto consumers.
Right.
But he has also been very like not steady on this. And so people don't really know what's going to happen. And this is such a like, it's really hard to find a economist that people take seriously who actually thinks that tariffs are a good idea. Like, it's like one of the only things that like Milton Friedman and Paul Krugman agree on. Like, right. I mean, Milton Friedman's dead, but you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
It's a bad idea. And the thing is, you know, the next president will likely reverse these tariffs if it has the effect that economists are saying. I just knocked wood in case listeners did not pick up on that.
I did too.
What is the point of all this? What is the point of just having these tariffs in place for a short amount of time, or threatening tariffs? Like, what is there a plan? Like, what's supposed to happen?
Aaron, you know what this all comes down to. So first, Trump got some hot idea in the 80s that tariffs were fucking rad. And he has been bent. He's been bent at all costs on doing this. So guess what? He's doing it. And the whole point is that he wants people to come and beg. That is all that this is. He wants country by country to come and beg him to reduce their tariffs. And it's like this deranged power trip. And the thing that he's done that he doesn't even care about is that he's destabilized the entire economy because people, like, stability is what makes everything okay. It's why people, he's trying to get people to build in the US. Well, building factories takes hundreds of millions of dollars and years. Why would you start building a factory now in America when he can change his mind via tweet in 24 hours? Mm-hmm. So there's no benefit to the economy for what he's doing. If you measure it by consumer confidence or the stock market, both are at lows. And so the only reason I can guess that he thinks these are so great is that he keeps saying, like he said the other day, 200 people had come to make trade deals.
Yeah, 200 countries, but there's only 180 countries or 190 countries or something.
193 countries.
Okay, so he said that more countries have come to make deals with him. This is the same problem as the ICE agents thing, right? It could just be random person wearing like a wacky hat being like, I'm from the People's Republic of Cubatonia and like, let's make a trade deal. Like, that would be a cool prank, actually.
And here's the thing. Do you think of all the times we're going to believe China? I fucking believe China when they say they've had zero conversations with him about tariffs. He keeps saying they're having conversations every day. The embassy is like, we have spoken to no one in the administration about this.
Oh, my God. It's like, it's funny both ways. I can't decide if it's funnier if they're actually having conversations and China's denying it. Like, they're like,
either way.
Yeah, like, you know, the Sex and the City episode where Big takes Carrie out to the like restaurant where she's like, oh, this is where people take people that they're ashamed that they're sleeping
yes,
with.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like, is America the Carrie Bradshaw, like the shame fuck of China? That's because that's funny. or is it that like, we're just lying about like, we're just like the little kid who's like, yeah, my dad's an astronaut baseball player. And it's like, you don't even have a dad. Like, which one, you know, which scenario is it? I think it's maybe the shame fuck one is funnier.
I think it's the shame fuck one.
But yeah, and it's really funny. I saw Kevin Hassett, who is he's an economic advisor to President Trump on CNN yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, we have sketches of deals.
Sketches. Contours.
Sketches of deals. They haven't announced any actual deals yet as of record time, but they have sketches of deals.
And the Treasury Secretary, he is trying to lay the groundwork because he has been on CNBC and a bunch of other networks saying very complicated, could take months and months, mm-hmm. months and months.
I hope that there's a lot of pictures in them because otherwise Trump's not going to pay attention to them. Oh, Alyssa, The girls are fighting.
Who's fighting?
There have been some lawsuits filed.
I know.
Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with some of our favorite girls getting into fights?
Listen, some large legal groups with ties to Leonard Leo, the aforementioned, and Charles Koch are suing the Trump administration on behalf of small businesses claiming the tariffs against China are unconstitutional. Members of the Blackfeet Nation claiming the tariffs against Canada violate a treaty, and the state of California claiming Trump lacks the authority to impose tariffs unilaterally. So interesting, because you know what? I really needed to dig into this one a little bit. And let me tell you, Trump is really, I was like, why would these guys, why would Leonard Leo and Charles Koch of all people be against the tariffs aside from the bad economic policy? And Aaron, so the law that Trump is basing all of this on is the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which was signed in 1977 by Jimmy Carter, which was meant to amend the Trading with Enemies Act, which was signed after America went to war with Germany in 1917. And it was literally meant to protect our supply chain and make sure that our shit didn't get into enemy hands. That was the point. And so the problem is Trump has now used this to try to ban TikTok, to say that everything's a national emergency if you use the broadest interpretation, which would have been the Trading with Enemies Act, that was for sanctions and for freezing assets. It has never, ever been for tariffs. And so these guys are like, sorry, but you're using government in a way that we absolutely object to, and we can't be hypocrites.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I guess go Koch brothers.
Yeah.
For now.
I mean, look, stand on principle.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's actually a pretty interesting conversation about the impact of tariffs on small businesses on a fellow Crooked Show Assembly Required with Stacey Abrams. They just did an episode about it. So you should check that out if you're interested in more conversation about this very topic. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more news. Hysteria is brought to you by The Books. Mother's Day is almost here, Alyssa. What are you getting your mom?
My mom, my sister, you know, they get flowers. They get a little Books in the mail.
Yeah, I mean, it is the thing that you must do is give your mother flowers.
It's the bare minimum.
That's the bare minimum. You must give your mother flowers. And you need to be figuring that shit out now.
Yes.
Mother's Day is a big flower day. You're going to give her flowers and take her to a botanical garden? That's a good idea, too.
But still send the flowers.
The flowers are foundational. Send Happy Mother's Day flowers from the Books Company, short for bouquets, and I got you 25% off the order, so you can send some happy too. Alyssa, I got it for you.
You got it for me?
I got a 25%.
That's weird because I got it for you.
What? We are constantly getting each other the same presents.
Always.
Books aren't just any flowers. Their flowers are cut from the best farms, so they're bigger, brighter, and they last way longer. Some even grow on the side of a volcano.
It's easy. I pick my bouquet and delivery date, and I'm already done. And with 25% off, why stop with mom? Grab some for your wife, aunt, grandma, too. All your lady friends, all the aunties. Look, guys, you can't forget mom. Mother's Day is May 11th. Order your Books now. Go to Books.com. Use our promo code Hysteria for 25% off. That's Books.com, promo code Hysteria. Books, promo code Hysteria.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that has realized that Phyllis Schlafly didn't die. She just comes back alive again in different bodies over and over again. Do you remember R.L. Stein, those books?
No.
R.L. Stein, like Fear Street. I guess maybe it was a little after your time. But maybe. Fear Street and Goosebumps and stuff.
Oh, I remember Goosebumps. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was after my time.
So they were like young adult like thrillers, and Fear Street was like the teen version of thrillers. And they had this series called Cheerleaders, and it was about this like evil thing that lived in Shadyside, which is like a funny name for a town where bad things keep happening. An evil that kept like inhabiting the bodies on the cheerleading squad, and they kept like they're like murdering each other and stuff. Anyway, that's what I think of as Phyllis Schlafly.
That seems right.
She's just sort of like this evil spirit, but also again, I don't think conservatives ever have any new ideas. Whether or not they're directly and on purpose copying things, they just are always copying things, and usually they're like worse versions of things that already exist. Case in point, the Make America Hot Again movement.
Just what we needed.
Just what we needed. Oh my God. Let's go, girls. So Make America Hot Again is a... Let's be very clear about this. This is a coordinated and I suspect extremely well-funded effort on the right to create a sort of butterfly net to catch young women and trick them and indoctrinate them into thinking that a traditional patriarchal lifestyle focusing on motherhood and subservience is the same thing as being sexy.
Yes.
That's what's going on.
Yes.
And there have been all these glossy events and these new publications that have cropped up in the last few years. The Conservateur is one of them. Mm-hmm. Evie Magazine, of which you and I are both subscribers, yes, is another one.
Very interesting content.
The mission of these sort of publications is to, quote unquote, this is the Conservateur's mission, restore long lost moral and aesthetic refinement. So they're trying to tie this notion of like Christianity and political conservatism and motherhood, but not like cool, like badass motherhood, like
no,
soft focus, like wimpy motherhood. They're trying to convince people that in order to be beautiful, you have to like align with that. They consider Melania Trump freaking fabulous, gorgeous in every way. They deemed Caroline Leavitt their Wonder Woman. I wonder why she holds her mouth like that. That's why I would call her Wonder Woman. Why are you doing that with your lips? That's not a natural thing to do with your lips. It's not filler. You want to get filler because your lips are so thin. So you're pursing them out in a way that's, it's weird, Caroline. I'm just, look, I know it's weird. Not Caroline Reston. Caroline with three Ks. Their recent headlines also include Inside Lara Trump's World and Make Your Closet Great Again. The Conservateur recently had a party that was profiled by Glamour magazine. I will say not adoringly.
No.
Alyssa, what do you make of this Make America Hot Again push? What do you think is going on? And do you think it's going to get legs?
I mean, first of all, can we just talk about the Inside Lara Trump's World spread? If this is what it means to be inside Lara Trump's world, I think everyone should be concerned. She was on a horse wearing a tiara. And to be clear, it was the horse wearing the tiara, not her.
Oh, okay. Wow, she's friends with the queen of the horses?
She was dressed like she was in Lawrence of Arabia on a horse, and the horse was wearing a tiara. Okay. If that is an aspirational aesthetic, they can have it. I don't want it.
I'm sorry. The only hat I would accept on a horse, top hat, propeller hat, no tiara.
That's it.
Top hat or propeller hat.
Leave him out of it.
Although a horse in a cowboy hat would be kind of funny if there were like holes for the ears.
That's different. That's adorable. That's not a tiara.
Is it her horse or is it just like—
Unclear.
She showed up to the shoot and they're like, you want to get on this horse?
Erin, here's the thing. The Conservateur is just, they all want to be in Vogue and Vogue won't have them. So they're like, we're going to make Fetch happen and we're just going to try to make this our Vogue. And it's just, it's not.
But here's the thing. Vogue is not for like the youths either. Like I find Vogue to be insufferable, kind of.
Well, yeah, of course. No, I know. But it is aspirational, right?
Right.
That's why they're so bent that Melania hasn't been on the cover as first lady, right?
Well, she was on the cover when she got married to Trump.
Right, but not as first lady.
Not as first lady, which is like, oh, we don't really talk about that, which is funny. Yeah, it's weird that they consider Vogue to be just like the height of like accomplishment and like chicness, and it's another reflection of the fact that like Donald Trump and all of his followers are kind of like they've like got 80s brain really bad.
Absolutely. Well, if you look at the fashion, look, I had an edible and I went through this website last night and I could not get enough. If their version of making America hot again is literally just making women physically uncomfortable in their garments again, like that's it.
Yeah.
Like it's not interesting. Like, and the stories I found, here's what I thought was so interesting. I read the Caroline Leavitt profile. If you replaced her name with a Democrat, like AOC or anybody else, or a Democrat who had kids, they'd be up in arms about the content of this article. The fact that she didn't want to take her full maternity leave, that she couldn't get back to work fast enough, that she had FOMO. And I was like, if any of us said that, they would be rage posting about it. And she was that was her whole thing. She couldn't get back fast enough.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it's like, who's taking care of your kids, Caroline? It's fine.
Totally.
Like all working moms have somebody watching their kids when they're at work, whether it's their partner or a paid childcare provider or some sort of like institutional childcare provider. But like, I just think it's so silly that they just kind of are like, yeah, you know, you should aspire to be a wife and mother, but like we're going to do, it's very Schlafly-esque, right? Like we're going to be out there hustling. We're going to be glamorous. We're going to have a glam. We're not going to do the drudgery of housework. Like we're going to have staffs doing it for us, but you need to do all the stuff that we pay somebody else to do. That's what hot is.
It is like textbook Schlafly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she told women that being liberated was really taking away their rights and going to ruin America, but she really had this whole movement because she wanted to work at the Department of Defense.
Yeah, she wanted to work at the DOD and just never got a job there. And she ended up, like, going to – she was, like, kind of impressive.
Yeah.
We did a This Fucking Guy video on her, and I say impressive in the way that, like, I would be impressed by, like, Satan himself. I'd be like, look, he's pretty famous. Like, he figured it – he's got a lot of interesting things to say.
She started a well-organized movement that we didn't agree with.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, the thing that our associate producer, Claire, brought up, and I really think this is an important thing to talk about when it comes to these, is that these magazines don't lead with, don't you want to just pop out some babies? Like, that's not what they lead with. They lead with, like, God, don't you wish that, like, celebrities didn't all have veneers? Like, a really banal, agreeable, but, like, traditionalist-leaning stance. That's, like, easy to click like on, easy to share, easy to, like comment on, like, oh, my God, yeah, why are the teeth so weird now? And you go from, like, why are the teeth so weird now to, like, harlotry has destroyed femininity or whatever, or, like, send the trans people to the moon or whatever. And, like, you end up in this really insidious, I think, like, lie-filled space that tries to paint a picture of motherhood and a traditional wifehood that is, like, full of fucking lies.
Totally. Well, it's, like, especially this, and I would say Evie, too, they are very, like, pro-trad wife for everybody, but not for them, right? Like, I looked at all of the profiles they had done. Levitt, Elise Stefanik, also says a lot that Tommy Tuberville was among the people they profiled. And they, Marsha Blackburn.
Oh my God, that'd be like if a women's magazine, a left-leaning women's magazine had like a Paul Giamatti spread. Like, that is
totally. They were just, but these women are like, they want everyone else. They do, they're not doing it. None of them are doing housework. They're not talking about cooking. They're all career first and happen to have children. And that's why I think it's such a scam, because that's not what they're selling.
Also, yeah, and the work of being a it's anybody who is actually a mother that actually does the work of motherhood and like does housework or whatever, like, would read that and be like, this is so fucking fake. And
right.
And I think the thing that kind of is like a tragedy or like a reflection of a short-sightedness on the left about this is that I was a part of a movement when I first started my career in media that was very critical of mainstream women's magazines that had sort of like a thinly, like a really unhealthy fixation on like thinness and aesthetics and all this stuff. And when I was writing for the website Jezebel, like slowly we saw these magazines change because the people that worked there were like, oh, yeah, we don't want to be participating in this either. We're like young, idealistic women who are like hopeful and looking ahead. It was the Obama era. We were all just the hopium.
Change.
The
change.
Hopium was pure. And so, like, the, you know, women's magazines changed. Like, Cosmo got self-aware and, like, goofy with the sex tips. Like, do you remember when they were like, put a donut on his dick?
Yes.
Like, it was like, it got funny. And then, you know, Glamour and all the women's magazines kind of, like, embraced this march to the left and, like, their cover stories about feminism and blah, 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 blah. And eventually, just because of the way the media environment was at the time, a lot of those magazines folded or became digital only, or like, and a lot of them don't have nearly the readers that they had before, like, this whole like cultural shift happened. And now the web part of that changed as well, has contracted massively. Jezebel still exists and it's a great publication. People should subscribe to the newsletter version of it. Got great writers. Definitely following news stories that people who listen to this show would be interested in. But there are other places that have just like folded up, that there is not a similarly funded counterweight on the left focusing on female audiences anymore. There just isn't. There isn't.
I would say there's maybe Teen Vogue.
Teen Vogue, but that's not for like adult women, and it doesn't
really talk about.
I mean, I do. Some of the articles are definitely like appropriate for adult women to read and enjoy, and I think are really good.
No, but you're right.
But it's written for like a teenage and young, like early 20s audience. So Teen Vogue, yes, but like, you know, when we're not having giant like glamorous left wing parties at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, sponsored by a left leaning, women-focused space that talks about culture, talks about sex, and talks about relationships, but also has a political point of view. And like, not to be like, give me all the money in the world, you know, like, and let hysteria be like a super big heavyweight thing.
But let us.
Other publications and outlets should be right now thinking about, the manosphere is cooked, man. Like, there are no inroads into young men. There are no inroads. I give up. I give up on the men. But I think that unless we are careful and play defense in the women's media space, and by playing defense, I mean, like, just investing more in developing female voices and, like, fostering female spaces that aren't, like, stupid. And unless we do that, we are going to have that space colonized completely by a really, really well-funded right-wing machine that has been saying for years that this is what they were going to be doing. They're moving into the mom space. They're moving into the like, young gal about town space. They're moving into the lifestyle space. They're going to be moving into, like, the outdoor space.
It's true. If you even look at the Conservateur, like I said, like, if I think of that as, like, Vogue, I think of Evie as, like, Cosmo or Glamour.
Right.
Right? Like, back in the day. And there's nothing. We have nothing.
Yeah. And those, and the thing that's also insidious about those magazines is they are very male centered.
Right.
They are centered on women doing what needs to be done to please men, to be compliant to a patriarchal design for what men think women should be. Mm-hmm. And they're participants, they're gleeful participants. And I'm not going to, like, undercut the intelligence of the female participants in this whole scheme, but they're people who think that the patriarchy will protect them.
Right.
And it, because it has so far, probably, it probably will, but it might not.
We need to bring back Ms. Magazine.
Well, Ms. Magazine, I think, still exists, but just not, I don't know.
It does, but I mean, like bring it back.
We had, I remember, like, Bust Magazine. I used to read Bust Magazine. And, like, I don't know if we need, like, print magazines, but we definitely need, like, you know, more Betches. We need more, like, women's spaces that get a lot of eyeballs, that have a point of view, and that are going to prevent this from, like, becoming the type of womanhood that young girls look up to as something that is, like, I think that, like, the version of womanhood they present is, like, really seductive too. It's like, wouldn't you like to just be married and live on a farm and have, like, five kids and your husband takes care of you and, like, everything is, like, you know, you have this big kitchen and a Viking stove and you make bread?
All of their, I will say, of all of the profiles that I read about five of them, they present—
What kind of edible did you take?
I'm
That's
telling you.
That's a productive
edible. I read Tommy Lauren. I read Caroline Levitt. I read Laura Trump. Very well-rounded people. Do you know what I mean? They don't present them as, I mean, I actually find them to be one-dimensional in real life, but the articles are written in such a way that they are compelling.
Right.
You know?
It's like the Barbification of—
But to be clear, they're not interviews. They are, like, very straight, totally positive profiles.
Puff pieces.
Yeah, total puff pieces.
You know, I heard a rumor that there have been writers who have written for Evie and not realized it.
Really?
Yeah. I heard a rumor that, you know, they would get approached, like, established writers and bylines and be like, hey, you know, we're, like, paying a pretty good rate, like $1,000 for, like, 1,200 words, which is, like, pretty good in this day and age.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a women's magazine. Can you do this? Blah, 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 blah. And they'll do it. And then they'll realize, like, after that, like, what they were writing for.
Wow.
Which is pretty, pretty wild. Yeah. I mean, I've worked most of my career in, like, women's media and spaces where I'm, like, trying to be thoughtful about what it means to have conversations that are led by women, and conversations where, like, women and it's expanded to be, like, women, gays, and theys. but just, like conversations that are not centered around the viewpoints and voices of cis guys, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very worried that the kind of perpetual pink ghettoification of women's media and the, like, the pushing of female voices into, like, the lifestyle section. I think it all left a vacuum that I think that the right wing is taking advantage of right now. And
doing a good job.
They're doing a good job. And if anybody wants to hire me to consult on starting a new women's voice space, I will help you because I've got a lot of thoughts.
Or could just give us money to do it ourselves.
I mean, I already get paid to do my job.
Fair.
That's, you know, I do get paid to do my job. But I am requesting a beanbag and a weighted blanket set. This is my request for a beanbag and a weighted blanket. Okay. All right. Alyssa, what do we think of their like worship of Melania?
They are obsessed with Melania. She, I mean, and the thing about it is, I don't even know what she's ever done to be obsessed by.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? She literally doesn't speak. Like, she doesn't give...
She did in that one video where she was like, I like to think abortion is... like, and...
Oh, do you mean the promo reel for her book?
For her book.
Yeah, that was really it.
How many people actually read that book?
Hard to tell. I think there were a lot of asterisks in the New York Times bestseller list, if you know what I mean. A lot of bulk buy.
Yeah, I mean, what does Melania represent? A person who clearly doesn't like her husband, who wears defensive hats that are obviously designed so that he can't get close to her face with his face.
Wears sunglasses with the aplomb of Anna Wintour indoors.
Has sometimes either looks very different than herself or has a body double to do things for her.
Yes.
One of those two scenarios.
Generally just, you know, she bees best.
Honestly, though, Alyssa, I gotta say, fake Melania is aspirational. Like, wouldn't you like a fake Alyssa that you could just send out? Like, you've got to go to this event.
Of
course. You don't want to go. You don't really want to talk to anybody, but you said you were going.
I just can't wait until fake Melania writes her book someday.
I mean, God, fake Aaron would get so much accomplished. Fake Aaron would go to the DMV.
Fake Aaron would be all over town.
Oh, yeah. I would have to, like, rein her in. I would be like, fake Aaron, you're doing great. You don't need to go above and beyond. You just need to do what I ask you to do. I don't need
to
show
minimum.
Up at movie premieres wearing glasses and a scowl. Real Aaron would never do that. So that doesn't seem believable at all. We're going to take a quick break. If this episode empowered you to stay petty, make sure to subscribe and share with your friends. We will be right back with a very special interview.
Hysteria is brought to you by Nutrafol. Summer is full of big moments, weddings, vacations, endless photos, Aaron. But if you're dealing with hair thinning or shedding, showing up and being present in those moments might feel tough. Nutrafol takes a whole body approach to hair growth, working from the inside out. So the sooner you start, the sooner you'll be feeling confident and focusing on what matters most to you.
Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1.5 million people. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. Alyssa, I got to tell you something. After having kids, now I understand the mom haircut. You know the mom haircut?
Yeah, of course.
Someone has a kid and suddenly they've got short hair. Like, I just thought it was because, like, babies take fistful of hair and just, like, yank on them.
No.
And that is partially true. But it is also true that a lot of times after you have kids, you experience some disturbing hair loss. Your hair just, like, sheds. You just shed for, like...
Do you know when else it happens? Perimenopause. All of a sudden that estrogen dips and the locks just end up in the drain.
Right. And, you know, there is a way to bring it back. It's not hopeless. You can work from the inside out with Nutrafol. That's why I really like it. It's like a supplement I can take every day to kind of help kickstart the process again. I'm already seeing results. I've been taking it for a couple months.
You look like a Finesse commercial to me.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes. Prel, Pert, all the old shampoos.
Thank you so much. This is an audio medium, so you can't see my hair. Start your hair growth journey with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Hysteria. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Hysteria. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Hysteria.
Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast that lives and dies for Charge Nurse Evans. If you've been listening to the show for the past few weeks, you know how obsessed I am with The Pitt. For those of you who have yet to binge, it's a medical drama where each episode details an hour of a chaotic emergency department shift at a fictitious Pittsburgh hospital. The show quickly gained acclaim from both real-world emergency workers for its accurate portrayal of their experiences, and for us regular viewers for its gut-wrenching and gripping storylines. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by Catherine Lanasa, who you may know as Nurse Dana Evans. I happen to know she's responsible for making me want to do ballet on the floors of an ER. Catherine, welcome to Hysteria.
Thank you for having me.
Is it true you're always dancing on set?
Yes. Yes. Nonstop. Nonstop. In fact, I can't share anything about that.
Oh!
If I ever were to return, I would be very concerned that my sneakers and the floor have the same relationship as they did this past season.
But wait, okay, well, we'll get to that later because I read a little something. So first, I just have to know, how does it feel to be part of a show, of an ensemble that is like America's favorite TV show? Everyone's talking about it. Everyone cannot get enough.
It feels amazing. Are you kidding me? Like, it was just a real bucket list thing to get to work for John Wells, you know, who's always had these complicated, real women, you know, in his television shows. I knew if I got to work for him, I'd get to do a complicated, kick-ass, you know, great character. So that was already amazing. The fact that people are responding to it is just like, they say in Louisiana, it's just lanyap. It's just an embarrassment of riches. I can't believe how lucky I am. But also it's really touching because I think at its core, in a way, a lot of the show is really about empathy.
Yes.
You know, and I felt when I was working on it that I was becoming more of an empathetic person. I think to play the role in, you know, your moment to moment when you're acting, right? If you're any good, if you want to be any good, be in the moment. So, but I felt like it was constantly about, oh, these people are going through this and I need to hold what they're going through. Or Robbie's going through this. I need to hold that. And it made me as a person realize on a deeper level that you really never know what people are going through. You know, totally. It gave me a lot more compassion.
To go a little bit back to the beginning, what was the casting process like?
You know, I had been unable to get arrested during this COVID self-tape nightmare that my life had become. And I got that role, and I had also gotten the Righteous Gemstones role at the same time. And my agents were like, oh, you're going to get it. We tried to get them to offer it to you. I don't know. I'm sure you saw the campaign, like the Rose Brady part, you know. So they thought that I was just a shoo-in for that role. And I remember I put it on tape and I had to do them with like within a day of each other. And then I put the pit on tape and I just thought I felt so much more right in the pit. I don't know why. I wasn't great in that Righteous Gemstones part. I don't know why. And I remember I called my agents and I was like, you know, I think that pit thing was pretty good. You hear anything? They're like, oh, they don't know what they want. Oh, they're seeing everybody. They're seeing all different kinds of people and they don't know what they want. And I thought it was kind of good. And Noah wrote this thing. I don't know if you've heard about this, but he wrote a letter to everyone that was auditioning.
No.
It was a great little letter. And it came along with your audition materials. And he basically said that he wanted everyone to bring their creativity and to leave their ego. And he wanted it to feel like this top-to-toe immersion. That's something that I always focus on. Like, I try to be completely active in what I'm doing, like whether I'm in the deep background or wherever I am. It's like all that physical stuff's really important to me.
Right.
And just something about the way that he wrote what he wrote, I thought in my little brain, I thought, you know, I think they want me. It's really weird. And I had not been able to get a job. I wasn't being arrogant. I just thought, I think I'm the kind of person they want. I think if I could get in front of them, I think they might want me.
We've all had. I mean, look, if you are lucky, you've had that moment at least once in your life.
Yeah.
Right? Where you're like, I think this is for me. And then it ends up being for you.
Yes, yes. I remember actually with Katie Keene, I had this audition for something that Mark Cherry was doing. Then I had this Katie Keene project, which was also on Max with Lucy Hale. And I remember saying to my friend, but you know, if we get that one, we're gonna have to move to New York and blah, blah, blah. You know, that one's gonna require us moving to New York. And my friend's like, you haven't even auditioned yet. And I remember thinking like, whatever.
It's gonna happen. But wait, so you auditioned for the pit, like over, like online.
Self-tape.
That's crazy. The whole reason I was curious about that question is because every single person in that show has such a physical role.
Yes.
And it is so I assume, like, I actually was curious. I was like, did you have to just like be running around? Like, how did you, I was like, physically, I thought physically you would have to perform in the way that that show is, you know?
No. And then they called me to do a callback with John Wells and I was in Palm Springs. I live in Atlanta. I was in Palm Springs interviewing a writer And they wanted me to do it like the next morning. I was in town actually to go to this like Bear's 50th birthday party. Flamboyant, you know, 60s themed party. I literally had like a flower jumpsuit and almost nothing else. So I had to go to Target at like 11 o'clock at night and buy like a sweatshirt or just something to wear. I was staying with some friends that are so minimal, they didn't have an extension cord. I had to borrow a ring light.
Oh my
God. The audition started like me, like the camera was all upside down. And it was kind of a nightmare. And I remember I did something. I was like, I want to start that again. Okay, can I do it again? And John's like, yeah, okay, do it again. But that's exactly how you played the scene, Catherine. I was like, okay. So I do it again. And then when I get to the next scene, the guy that's reading with me, his poor first line was, do we have any meropenem and pyxis? And he flubbed it. And he got really flustered because he doesn't want to mess up my audition.
Sure.
And so I was like, welcome to my world, buddy. And then he he's like, I think I just need some water. And I was like, just take your time. You got this.
So we flipped
it around. I ended up making them laugh a lot. And I called my agent and I was like, they liked me, but I don't know if they just think I'm a buffoon.
Right.
Like it was just a fun part of their day or what. And it just kept going. And I had to send in more material later. I had to do another scene. Yeah. Just kept going. And then I got it.
That is so shocking. Okay. So you get the job. Mm-hmm. You are charge nurse, Dana.
Yeah.
So one, what does it mean to be a charge nurse? And mm-hmm. how did you prepare? You actually shadowed someone, right?
Yes. Well, first of all, I come from a long line of hard-ass women, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that I have the qualities that I love that John Wells put together. You know, it's always these long-suffering women, right? Mm-hmm. In television, and the guys, he's just a rascal and she's just long-suffering, right? And so I love that John made her this badass, hard-ass, that's also compassionate and warm.
Yeah.
And motherly. You know, yep. I love all that. I am a mother. I've had a kid since I was in my early 20s. I have a 34-year-old son. I have an 11-year-old daughter. I've always been a mother. I'm kind of like Martha Stewart. I'm a very domestic bitch. And so
that is, I see the parallels.
Yes. I'm watching the Martha documentary now. And I'm
it is so excellent.
No, my husband needs to watch it so he can understand me. I'm like, there I am. I'm there. That's me. So that part I already had, and that's probably why I got the role, because I think I am intrinsically have both of those qualities, right? Yeah. That I'm kind of, I'm very visceral. Yep. I'm very like, people have always told me everything about themselves. I'm pretty open, and people have always told me a lot of stuff, strangers even, about themselves. So there's something about me that was right about it. But yeah, I went and shadowed Kathy Garvin and I learned so much. I was listening to a podcast today and someone said, you never know how much information you're going to get if you just show up at the crime scene.
And you did.
That's how it was going to the hospital. You know, I don't know if you ever see it, but if anyone even notices, but I have this piece of paper in my back pocket that I carry around.
Yeah.
And it would drive Noah crazy. It's like, it looks like sides. I go, America doesn't know what sides are. You know, little pieces of script, right?
Right.
But the nurse in the emergency department, one of the charge nurses, would print out all the patients and then she would make her rounds and make notes on the paper. And because I'm, what am I? Am I Gen X? Did you see that? What's her name's?
We're Gen X.
Gen X.
Yeah, we're Gen X.
I write. Okay.
Yeah, so do I.
I use paper.
I can even do cursive.
I use paper. So I wanted to write and John didn't want anyone to write. So I had to ask special permission to write. And he goes, I just didn't want the kids to write because nobody knows how to write anymore. I was like, yes, can I please write? Like I wanted to write, not just type everything on a pad. So this woman wrote and she had like a piece of paper and she would write on it and she'd go around and then she'd fold it. It was all folded up and then she'd get back to her computer and open it up. So little gems like that or
yeah.
They have sandwiches too and just lots of little things of the way they responded or talked about their regulars. Like they have their Earls and their Myrnas and they were there. Myrna's the best.
I love Myrna. When she went missing, I was like, oh no, I hope the Pit Fest shooter wasn't Myrna. So it was interesting to me and I'm curious what it was like. the fact that the show, I found it, even though other shows have followed the same format of 1 hour within each day, right? Yeah. And that's the show. What was that like? Because for you, it was actually like, I started thinking about it. I'm like, she can't dye her hair. How long did you film it? And was it as satisfying to play a show in that format as it was for me to watch that in that format?
Well, yeah, there was a couple things. First of all, it was a lesson in letting go, you know, like, oh, you're going to have a black eye and you're not going to have any makeup. And, you know, honestly, it did me a world of good. It's like, it allowed me to be more myself. But to be honest, the whole process, the set and the process that we did, which was different. Normally, you will go and shoot everything in your character's office, you know, for that one or two episodes. Sometimes even they double board and they'll do two episodes. So you'll spend 2 days and you'll shoot all seven scenes that are in the office for those two episodes. And then you move on to this. So it's all kind of disjointed. And it's also like everyone's hanging lights and doing stuff and you're away in your dressing room or in your cash chair. And then the divas walk on and everyone separates.
Right.
Here, it was like, we had no cash chairs. We used the family room as our green room and we stand around and we shoot in order.
Okay. It would seem like that would have to be the case.
Because they needed to let the set, we weren't going to have, oh, now we have blood spatter. Now we don't have blood. Right. Now we have this. Now we have that. Now it allowed the set to age with us. And it was all a grand experiment. I mean, if you hear John and Scott talk, they're like, we didn't know if it was going to work.
But,
you
know. But boy, did it ever.
It was very relaxing, that big set. It kind of starts to feel like home. You never change your clothes. You're not in anything where what you look like matters at my age and with the lack of makeup. I'm not in like a Spanx within, you know, an inch of my life and nails and everything has to be perfect. You kind of, it became very relaxing. And I think in a way, the nature of how we shot actually lended itself to what got John was going for, which was like to feel like you were inside it. So it all became kind of relaxed.
So here's a question. Watching especially the episodes, I think it was about three episodes that cover the Pit Fest mass shooting that you guys are dealing with. And you should know, I watched every episode. So when every episode was about to come on Thursday night, I would rewatch the previous two episodes to get in the mood. So I have watched each episode multiple times. For Pit Fest, I was like, when I would see you dancing on Instagram, I'm like, was there actual choreography? There are so many people. The floors are slippery. How did an episode like that get made?
There's a lot of choreography. And the people
that
ran the background were really terrific. So they all have a mission. All the background has a plan. And then we have a plan. And then all, I don't know if you've talked to anybody else, but all the trauma scenes have choreography. And so,
Okay.
So they will write down if you're in a trauma scene, whether it was in those units, like, you know, the red zone or the pink zone or the yellow zone, or whether you were in a trauma room in any of the other episodes, you would have a set of sides, which are like a mini script page. And it would say, like, on this line, you're going to go hang that blood bag and you're going to connect the line. And then you're going to take this scalpel and you're going to go put it over there. And then you're going to leave, you know? Or you'll check and see what so-and-so is doing. So they might give you four or five things like that. You might not get it all done. So the real ER docs that we have that come every day, we have two teams that rotate. They are responsible for creating that choreography and writing that. And so often when they're shooting the scene before that, you're running the choreography for your scene. I know that the kids that actually have to do the, I know it's not called surgery, but the trauma operations or whatever you call it. Those people even had greater levels of rehearsal earlier on, I think just because of all the suturing and all of that stuff. But yeah, it's all choreographed.
So it's all choreographed, but yet it still looks, how many run-throughs would you say? Like one of the things that I had read was one of the most moving scenes in the show is Noah Wiley's final speech that he delivers at the end of the final episode. And I had read that that was delivered like 15 or 20 times, different takes to get different angles and stuff like that. But it still felt like, was there a trick for you particularly to like, how do you maintain that authenticity going into what's maybe the final take after you've done it 10 times. And I mean, I think it's such a testament to to everybody's acting, because I feel like I'd start hauling my ass across the finish line. You know what I mean?
Noah is really a master actor. I feel like he's a guy that puts no pressure on himself. And I think it's mm-hmm. why he's so good. It's like, I don't feel like he's ever trying to force some moment out of himself, force himself to cry or force himself to this or force himself to that. He's so relaxed that his instrument is just so available to him. So he's amazing, but I like repetition. I repeat a lot when I practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to practice things a lot so that when I get there, you know, maybe I have to practice certain behaviors if it's really technical. Sometimes if I think I want to do something with pens and pencils and this is and that's, I'll rehearse that when I do my lines. Right. I'll run my
line
and maybe even think, oh, I probably want to be writing here. So I'll try to practice, have some loose idea if there's a lot of physicality in it.
Yeah.
So I like repetition. It doesn't really throw me off. I mean, the trick is really to not become self-conscious or try to repeat yourself. That's when you kind of suck from repetition. But I don't mind it.
I have to say, I was a freshman in college when ER debuted, mm-hmm. and we would watch ER before we went out for the night. Oh. And so I had like a real relationship to the characters of ER, because like you'd be having your like, you know, vodka and, you know, Crystal Light and getting ready to go out.
Bacardi and Slurpee is what we had in
Okay. And so we would be like, we all thought that like Dr. Carter was dreamy back mm-hmm. then. And now I'm perimenopausal. I have night sweats. No one speaks to me more than weathered, grumpy Dr. Robbie. I was like, oh,
yes,
we have come through our adulthood together. This makes so much sense.
Dr. Daddy.
And you guys were actually in an episode of ER together.
Yes. So,
but you didn't meet.
No, what was really funny is one day, so my dad is a surgeon. And so he's, of course, hated every other medical show besides this one. And when it came out, my dad was like, oh, this is the first one that's, you know, that's real, and this show and that show, that's just BS, but this is really real. And we were having a lunch with John and Scott and all the cast. And I told John Wells, I was like, my dad was like, I told him what my dad said. And he goes, yeah, it's not like we're having people like having sex in the broom closet. And I went, I had sex with Goran in the broom closet on ER. And John was like, but it was the seventh season. So
it was different back then.
I can't believe he said
that. It is hilarious.
I know.
On the show, so you obviously have gotten to know everybody very well. You've spent so much time together.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who plays a role that is just so opposite of their actual personality?
Wow. Let me think about that. God, maybe. Let's see. Garen.
Okay. I had to know. I'm like, because I'm
very
also like
funny. He's very quick. He's Welsh.
Okay.
And I don't know why we have this thing. People always get his name wrong because it's like G-E-R-R-A-N. So I always call him Jerry. Because people would call him Jaron. His name is Garen. I'd be like, listen, Jerry. And I would always call him Jerry. And then I was, because he's Welsh, I don't know why. We had this whole thing where we would call each other Jerry. And then I'd be like, I've had about enough of your beeswax, Jerry.
Oh my God, the pit sounds fun. The cast sounds
the
fun.
The pit is a groove. We had a great time. It really did. We played pickleball together. It's fun. We played poker.
I saw some of the pictures. I saw poker pictures on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's some. I'm only reporting what I have read.
Okay.
Okay, this is only what I've read.
Yes.
So only. we have read that the pit has been renewed for season two.
Yes.
Coming back in January 2026.
Yes.
We are rejoicing. I could not have waited 18 months or 2 years for that.
Yes.
We have read that it is going to take place several months later during 4th of July weekend.
I heard that too. But
okay.
I heard that just from doing interviews.
Okay, so I'm not done with what I've read.
Okay.
So this season ended with Nurse Dana slyly packing up her family photos.
Yes.
She had enough.
That was my real daughter, by the way.
I kind of wondered. And you packed it up. And the question everybody was curious about was, does she come back?
Right.
We cannot have the pit without the matriarch, the boss pit, like Data.
I hope you're.
And then, well, I'm just telling you again what I have read.
Where'd you read
that in Variety? Gemma was saying that it wouldn't have been possible for Dana to come back if the show had picked up where it stopped. However, since it's taking place months later, it would make much more sense if Dana were to have returned, perhaps after a break.
Ooh, I like
that. Okay, have you not read that? Have you not read that? I
did not read that.
Okay, so I'm just telling you, that's what I read.
Oh, that's good.
And so I was very hopeful.
Oh, good.
Like, fingers crossed. Yeah. Okay. Couple last questions, okay. Then I will let you go. This has been so fun. Do you think Whitaker and Santos will fall in love?
Wow.
Right?
Wow, that would be amazing.
I'm just saying.
I thought there was going to be a little thing with Whitaker and the nurse, Ambar, her real name, Kim. I thought there was going to be something with Whitaker and Kim. Now that, you know, Kim is a real nurse.
I read that there are actually real medical professionals in the show.
That are actors, yeah.
Right, like one of the male nurses in the show is actually a charge nurse.
Oh, Tim Van Pelt.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was actually on the West Wing.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a real...
And then he went and became a charge nurse, and now he's working for John Wells doing this.
I mean, look, it's a family.
Yeah.
You got to stay in the family if you're with John Wells.
And he's one of our supervisors. It's so nice to be able to go to him at any time and say, what would I do here? Or...
Well, Erin Jontow, who's one of the executive producers on the show, I have known Jontow for years.
Oh.
And when the show came out, you know, you don't always see the credits, like the way it streams.
Uh-huh.
And I am a nerd and I also work at a production company. And so I always like to see the credits and I see her name and I fired her off an email so fast. I was like, bitch, you're creating incredible television. What have you done? How did I not know you were doing this? So I will say after the finale, she's like, girl, did we land the plane? I was like, you fucking landed the plane for sure. I'm like 10 out of 10 season. And I told her, I go season finale, not series, right? She's like, girl, keep watching. So anyway, Catherine, thank you so much. I just have one comment generally.
Yes.
Is that I'm such a fan for many, many reasons. But one is that like in a world that feels quite devoid of excellence and empathy right now, I just think the show is the epitome of both of those things. I think it's why people love it so much. So Catherine, thank you so much for coming on Hysteria today. I hope you will be back in season 2, and I hope you will come back and see us in season 2.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hysteria is brought to you by Fatty 15. Erin, how important is staying young to you?
It's not about staying young.
No.
It is just about
feeling good.
I want to feel good. I like getting older mentally. I like the lessons that I've learned and the wisdom that I've gained.
Me too.
I don't like my back hurting when I stand up from sitting down.
Aches,
you know?
Pains. It's real. It happens for so many reasons.
I don't like not being able to get down on the floor and put together a puzzle with my kids and then take like 10 seconds to stand up while going, ugh.
When you got to do the roll and tuck to try to get back up.
That sounds like a modern dance move. I am so excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. It's an incredible scientific breakthrough to support our long-term health and wellness. And you guessed it, aging and longevity. Fatty 15 co-founder Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson discovered the benefits of C15 while working with the U.S. Navy to continually improve the health and welfare of aging dolphins. Look, if it's good enough for dolphins,
it's good enough for us.
Good enough for you, it's good enough for me.
Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a key longevity-enhancing nutrient, which helps to slow biological aging at the cellular level. In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they become fragile and age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too. Best of all, Fatty 15 comes in a gorgeous reusable glass bamboo jar and refills are shipped right to your door.
Fatty 15 is on a mission to optimize your C15 levels to help you live healthier longer. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/hysteria and using code hysteria at checkout. Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast for people who have not stopped thinking about Bill Belichick's girlfriend since Sunday.
What on earth?
I know. This is going to be a preview of what my Sani Petty is this week, because I'm obsessed with her. But before we get into it, some announcements for the class. Let's look overseas on what's happening across the pond. This week on Pod Save the UK, the UK Supreme Court just ruled that the legal definition of woman is based on biological sex, a chilling win for the anti-trans movement.
Trans campaigner and author Ellen Jones joins host Nish and Coco to break down how they got here, what J.K. Rowling has to do with it, and what allies can actually do to support the trans community right now.
Plus, with Australia heading to the polls, Nish talks to former Deputy PM Wayne Swan about what the U.S. and U.K. can learn from Australia's voting system and why the Commonwealth might matter more than ever in the Trump era.
Listen to this episode now on the Pod Save the UK YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts.
We just survived the first 100 days of Trump's presidency again. On the latest episode of Inside 2025, Dan Pfeiffer and Alyssa answer listener questions about Trump's first 100 days, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and the bathroom situation in the West Wing. Alyssa, the bathroom situation.
There's a lot to talk about there.
Our very own Hysteria producer, Caroline Reston, moderates. Here's a quick preview.
The main floor was a lovely, you're in someone's nice house kind of bathroom. It's just you walk in, you close the door, you're by yourself.
But it's also around the corner from the Oval Office, and a lot of people are going to the Oval Office like to use that bathroom. So, like, you could go in there, and the entire Joint Chiefs of Staff could be outside.
100%.
I went in once and I came out and Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie were standing there. Right. At any time, the members of Congress, I wouldn't say it was
a cornucopia.
If the president was out of town, it was peaceful. But if he was in the office, like it was, you were in the center of the action when you were in that bathroom. Yeah.
If you want to get access to this exclusive series, our Discord community, and ad-free episodes of shows like Pod Save America and Love It or Leave It, head to crooked.com/friends to subscribe.
Now let's get to Sani Petty. Okay, Alyssa, I already kind of like spilled the beans on what mine is.
Well, we have the same one.
Okay, so let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Okay, so on Sunday, I started seeing clips of this interview with former Patriots coach and current North Carolina football coach, Bill Belichick, who I personally hate. I just do. I don't know very much about him. I don't like his attitude. I think that he's a sloppy guy. I don't like him. I don't like the Patriots. It's fine. So he was doing an interview with CBS Sunday morning, I believe.
Yes.
And he's getting asked all these questions. And at one point in the interview, they're like, his girlfriend, Jordan, was by his side the whole time, like, and they implied that they were kind of annoyed with her, and they show this kind of, like, supercut of her, like, meddling. She's, like futzing with his shirt. She's, like, looming behind a desk like a little golem being like, we're not talking about that. Like, it's so, so funny. And at first, it was like, whoa, this girl's weird. Because, you know, she's like, first of all, she's 24 and she's dating a 72-year-old man, which is inherently weird. I'm sorry.
It's 50 years.
It's fucking weird. It's you are young enough to be your boyfriend's daughter's daughter. Like, that's fucking weird. whatever. They're happy, but it's fucking weird. And then I kind of started going down the rabbit hole of Jordan. And I found that she is... basically had all of the messages that are going to her boyfriend CC'd to her, like, demanded. And she's declared herself, like, the head of Bill Belichick Productions or something.
Yes.
She's copyrighted a bunch of Bill Belichick-related things. She's copyrighted them. She holds 7 copyrights. And she is just really doing stuff that if I were one of Bill Belichick's kids, I would be like, uh-oh, what's going on there? It's just really funny. She's the rabbit hole is deep. There have been some FOIAs that have been done. Yeah. And because Bill Belichick works at a state university, they are subject to FOIA. And so there's all these message like chains that she's on where she's just like, she's just this like 24-year-old go-getter media, like self-proclaimed media executive.
She thinks she's a Svengali, first of all. She thinks that she is like crafting some sort of something around him. She put him in the most outrageous T-shirt of all time for the interview.
It had holes in it.
It had holes in it, like a failed Abercrombie model from 1992.
The thing is, like, if you're young and hot and you wear a shirt that is covered in holes, like, it works. But if you're old, if you're 72 years old and you're wearing a shirt covered in holes, you look like you should have supervision. during the day.
And also, here's another thing. The question that she shut down that Tony DiCoppo asked was about how the two of them met, right? Mm-hmm. Which then just prompts people to be like, well, how did you meet? So, of course, I had to know. And apparently, there is like all of this controversy over the fact that they say a year ago, whenever they first got together, they told people they met on a plane sitting next to each other. But like now TikTok is all like, we don't think it's true. And some internet sleuths are trying to figure it out.
I mean, it's funny. It's a very Streisand effect-y thing. There's a part of me that's like, here's the innocent explanation. She is producing a documentary about him, which is true.
Right.
Maybe she wants to save some material to be revealed on the documentary as like an exclusive.
Well, then she should have not had him write a book.
I have to say this, though. Jordan Hudson, more empowering and aspirational than the Blue Origin spaceflight.
Yeah, I agree with that.
For women, I gotta say. I think there's more girl power happening right now. It is dark girl power.
She is writing her own narrative.
It is not necessarily aspirational girl power, but it is a form of girl power, and there's more of it involved in this. Like, literally steering, like, she's like steering Bill Belichick down for his, like, splashdown by herself. She's 24 years old, and, like, I've seen footage of her like running up to him like during practice, like doing all these things where it's like, girl, what are you doing?
It is. How about the fact that she clearly leaked her own photo of a potential engagement ring to Page Six?
Oh my God. I mean,
the thing about her is because she's a baby cat, and as you would say, her full frontal lobe is not yet formed.
No.
She's doing the most hackish of PR moves.
Right. I mean, like, she could have been, like, really cool in the interview. Like,
Could have been like, hey, Tony.
What if she started laughing? She was like, ha, 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 we're not talking about that. Like, that's so much, like.
No, but she had a sinister Gossip Girl look about her face.
She was so, like, I would not mess with her. Not because I think that she's, like, making some good points, but it's just like this, she sounds like a real pain.
Wild card. She's a real wild card.
Also, like, Bill Belichick dated his girlfriend before her for like 16 years and they never got married. So, like, good luck, sis. Like, I don't think
100%.
I don't think that's happening, but whatever. I am fascinated with this story. I don't have, like, I'm not trashing her.
No, but it's too good to not watch.
It's like, it's fascinating. Maybe she is a Svengali because she's got us all talking about it. Like, I brought it up to my husband and he doesn't care about college football at all. He's like NFL all the way. He like loves NFL football so much that he like listens to Steelers podcasts during the off season.
Okay.
But no college football for him. And even he'd heard about it and he was like, what's going on with this thing?
It was everywhere.
I just love the story. I love the footage. I think I'm going to watch it again after we get done recording.
Absolutely.
Alyssa, do you have anything else to add, Sandy or Petty, this week?
No, that was it. It really, because I had not heard of the story until you mentioned it. And then, you know, as I went down the rabbit hole and I couldn't get enough.
It's just, was that part I was of your on edible page journey?
Six. Yeah,
it Alyssa's was part of my edible fabulous journey. Edible journey. Yeah. Last night where you're like reading Tommy Lauren profiles.
I'm like, wait, let's take a break from Tommy and go back to Jordan for a minute.
You're searching like the web archive for old like live journal entries from.
Where
from,
was she?
Yeah, from Jordan Hudson. I do have like one Sandy thing. It's like random, but I discovered a hot sauce that has like changed my life.
What is it?
It's called Yellow Bird. Have you had it?
You love anything with a bird. Oh, you go. I have a bird related thing too.
Yeah, no, it's not because it has a bird on it, Alyssa. It's because I was at a restaurant.
I know, you just made me think.
I was at the grocery store one day. And they were like, do you want to try this sample of hot sauce? And I was like, sure. And I tasted it. And my eyes turned into hearts, like the middle of my eyes.
It was just delicious.
It's so good. They've like, I'm really into the serrano pepper flavor. Mm-hmm. This is not sponsored, by the way. I just like put it on everything now. I put it on eggs. It's so good. Mm-hmm. If they do want to sponsor us, please do. Because like, and send me some Yellow Bird hot sauce. It's so good. Cannot recommend it enough.
I could use a good hot sauce.
It's like you can actually taste the serrano
pepper. I was going to say, like, it has flavor. It's not just hot.
No, it's not just hot. It, like, has a distinct flavor to it. It's really good. It is, like, spicy. So if you don't like spicy food.
Right.
But it's, like, it's really, really good. Okay, Alyssa, what's your bird thing?
I saw two eagles this morning when I was walking.
What were they doing? Were they eating a dead
carcass? No, they were, like, hanging out having coffee in a field. And my friend Mona and I were walking and we're like so quiet. We're like getting closer and closer. And we got really close to them. And they were just like, I don't know. It was like, I'd never seen anything like it. I was like, God, nature's awesome.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, they're just chilling.
at least they weren't fighting, because that would have been a metaphor.
No, I mean, correct. We were just like, we kept our distance because we didn't know how it was going to go, but it was awesome.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know. It's funny. Every time I'm close to like a bird of prey, I'm like, wow. I can't believe they live in the same world as us. And also, totally. Like, they probably used to eat us when we were small, like monkeys running around. And you
they know. Could probably pick us up.
Pre-humans, yes, they absolutely could. Okay, on that note, that birds used to eat us, let's wrap it up. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. We'd also like to thank Catherine Lanasa for joining us.
So exciting.
It was Alyssa, the Pitt superfan, and I'm sure—
I loved it.
We have in our Discord community quite a few Pitt superfans, to the extent that we had to start a Pitt superfan side conversation. And so, listeners, thanks to you, hysteria@crooked.com. If you want to get in touch, there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusives like This Fucking Guy, our video series. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. And thank you to Daisy Cruz, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.